The number of Catholic marriages are plummeting, and the bishops have a solution. Extend the time for marriage preparation. Why does this solution miss the mark badly, and what should be done to address the Catholic marriage crisis? That's what we're going to talk about today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, I want to encourage people to smash that like button. I almost forgot to say smash. Sorry about that. Smash that like button, subscribe to the channel, but don't bother notifying because you should have a life outside of the internet. Also, I just want to encourage people to follow us on all the various social media channels. At Crisis Mag is our usual handle that we have, so just follow us there. Also, we are in one of our twice a year fundraising drives. So I want to encourage people to go to www.crisismagazine.com/donate. That's crisismagazine.com/donate. And I would just ask that you would donate to our work. Everything that we offer, all our articles, podcasts, everything we do is offered for free. We don't charge anything. We don't have a paywall or anything like that. A lot of places have paywalls, which, you know, that's fine. They can do paywalls. They might have subscriptions. We don't have any of that. We offer everything for free to anybody who wants to read our content, to listen to us or whatever. And so I would just encourage you, though, in order that we can do that, for you to donate. So in order to make everything free to anybody who wants to come to us, we need the donations. So we're in the middle, and twice a year, we don't like harass you for donations all year round, all the time. I know that gets annoying, but twice a year, we do ask for donations. Usually in the spring and in the fall. And here's our fall fundraiser. So I just want to encourage everybody to go to crisismagazine.com/donate. Okay, so let's go ahead and jump in here. So needless to say, I think all of us recognize that there's a problem with Catholic marriage. There's a problem with marriage in general, understanding what marriage is, getting married even, and staying married. All the numbers show bad things. You know, I'll pop up one chart here and it shows the number of Catholic marriages in the United States. This is from CARA, the Center for Applied Research and something else from Georgetown. And they track a lot of these sacraments. And if you look at the chart, if you're listening, I'll explain it. In 1970, there were over 400,000 Catholic marriages in the United States. It dropped down pretty decent amount in the 70s, in the 80s, continued to decline in the 90s, and then since 2000, it's gone to a free fall. So around 1995, there were still 300,000 marriages in the United States, Catholic marriages in the United States. So 300,000 around 19, so that'd be about almost 30 years ago. And then it dropped down to about 250 in 2000. But now in 2020, the year that it was most recent, 2021, it was less than 100,000. So we've gone from over 400,000 to less than 100,000 Catholic marriages in the United States. What I mean is how many marriage weddings, probably is more accurate, weddings that year. So over 400,000 to less than 100,000. Clearly, the rate of marriage is dropping precipitously. And I think we all know there's lots of factors here. The number of Catholics are dropping. The number of practicing Catholics are dropping. The number of people getting married is dropping. All these different, just lots of factors that are causing this to happen. And so as people leave the church, either for Protestantism or completely out of Christianity, or if they aren't getting married, all these things factor in. But clearly, this is a crisis. If we have less than 100,000 weddings in the United Catholic weddings in the United States in a year, when we had over 400,000 52 years ago. So I think there's a lot of reasons for this. I think it's fundamentally a lot of it's a misunderstanding of what marriage is, the importance of marriage. And I think we can see a lot of different stats. There was a 2015 Pew Research study done on Catholic attitudes towards a lot of things, but marriage was one of them. And I think that we have to recognize that. And so let's go through some of this stuff. And so some of these, now this is from 2015, which was 7 years ago. And I think every one of these stats are probably worse today. So for example, let's just look at, whoops, that's the wrong one. Let me pull up this one, the divorce rate. So in 2015, 34% of those who have Catholics have been married have been divorced. 34% of Catholics have married. So one third of every Catholic who's married has been divorced. That's actually good compared to other rates. So the Protestants are at 46%. Unaffiliated with no religion is 49%. And when you break it down a little bit, if you attend Mass less than once a week, the rate goes up to 38%. And if you attend Mass at least once a week, it's 28%. If you think about that, that's awful. 28% of people who attend, 28% of married Catholics who've been married are divorced, who attend Mass at least once a week. So that's obviously a misunderstanding of what marriage is. If you get divorced, one or both of the parties don't understand what marriage is, because divorce is not possible in a Catholic marriage. Obviously, there can be cases where one of the parties doesn't want to get divorced. But ultimately, if there's a divorce, one of the two, at the minimum, accepted divorce as an option for marriage, which it's not an option for a Catholic marriage. There's another one, marital history among Catholics ever been divorced is 25%, and it goes up, and it's 30% for the general public. Again, that's not a good number. But then let's start looking at some of the other things that relate to marriage. So, for example, cohabitation history. 44% of Catholics have at least at one time lived with a partner that's not their spouse, obviously. And that's a huge number. 62% of cultural Catholics. Ex-Catholics, 64%. General public, 51%. So Catholics aren't that much better off. 44%. And if you're cohabitating with somebody, then you don't understand marriage. You don't understand human sexuality. You don't understand any of these things, really, if you're living with somebody, a partner whom you're not married with. And so 44% of Catholics, and remember, this is 2015, I guarantee you it's worse today. They haven't done, I don't think they've done an updated study since then. I guarantee it's higher. And so a lot of people who cohabitate, they don't even bother getting married, which is the reason why the marriage rates are down. Or if they do get married, they often get divorced. You're more likely to get divorced if you cohabitate beforehand. So there's another factor. Another one is acceptance of various living conditions for adults. And the question was asked, is this acceptable? And the statement was, a husband and wife who choose not to have children. Note how it's worded. Not that they can't have children, but they choose not to have children. 70% of Catholics stated that is acceptable and as good as any other way of life for a husband and wife to choose not to have children. I'm going to talk a little bit later about the procreative aspects of marriage and how important they are. But clearly, if you think, and by the way, that's actually an invalid marriage. That can be annulled. If a couple goes into a marriage deciding not to have children, like they're like, we're not going to have children, that is actually a reason for annulment because it's not a valid marriage. You have to accept the possibility of children. You might not be enthusiastic about it, but you have to at least accept the possibility of children. Yet 70% of Catholics think that it's acceptable and as good as any other situation to choose not to have children. Also, a man and woman in a romantic relationship living together without being married, 55% of Catholics say it's as good as any other way of life. A same-sex couple in a romantic relationship living together, 46%, almost half of Catholics in 2015 said that was acceptable and as good as any other way of life. And so we see clearly Catholics do not understand marriage. If you think a husband and wife choosing not to have children is as acceptable and as good as any other way of life, that's, you don't understand what marriage is. Okay, also another one. Percentage who say a husband and wife who choose not to have children is, Catholics views on adult lifestyles. It's similar types. Okay, here we go. Same-sex child rearing. So 43% think that it's okay for a gay or lesbian couple to raise children and as good as any other arrangement. So what they're saying is a children can, that a lesbian or gay couple, so a homosexual couple, can raise children, and that's just as good as any other arrangement. 43% of Catholics said that's okay in 2015. And I guarantee that one's way worse now. That's probably spiked up. I wouldn't be surprised if it's over 60% at this point. So these are Catholics, what Catholics think. And so probably at least half of Catholics think that a gay couple raising children is just as good as any other arrangement. Clearly, that is a fundamental misunderstanding of marriage again. And so this is important to understand all these different things, to understand how badly people, Catholics, are catechized when it comes to marriage, and how badly they understand what marriage is. Because if you misunderstand what marriage is, then you're very likely not going to get married yourself, or you're not going to understand what the purpose of a marriage preparation is or anything like that. So clearly we have this problem with marriage, a Catholic marriage crisis. So as we often do when we have crisis in the church, our church leaders think of something to maybe help solve it. And I think a lot of them are good, are well-intentioned. They actually see the problem. They say, we need to solve this. And I think most bishops today know there's a real problem with Catholics and marriage, that we don't understand what it is. We don't go into it properly. We don't live it out properly. All these different things related to marriage. I think most bishops understand that. So as is usual, they propose programs. That's usually the solution church leaders have. So first, the Vatican. So this was, I'm going to pull up this on the screen here real quick. The Vatican, when was this back? Yeah, past summer. The Vatican released a 97-page instruction endorsed by Pope Francis to outline how marriage formation is to be based on the baptismal catechumenate. And so it talks about the idea that we're not going to do the same thing that we've done before. Because typically you have a baptismal catechumenate, meaning adults who are going to get baptized, they go through a catechumenate program. That's as ancient as the early church. And so you usually, typically in the early church, it would have been maybe 3 years long. Now it's like 1 year long, RCIA, something like that. And so what they're saying is we need something like that in marriage, not just marriage prep, but a catechumenate. So let me read this part, because this is the key part that the Vatican was suggesting this summer. Broadly sketched out, the Vatican envisions a catechumenate for marriage with three parts. So three parts. It suggests approximate preparation that takes place over the course of a year, depending on the couple's experience of faith and involvement in the life of the church, followed by an immediate preparation in the months after the wedding. I'm sorry, the months before the wedding. This could include a betrothal rite, among other signs, leading up to receiving the sacrament of matrimony. Just an aside real quick, I think a betrothal rite is a great idea. That's an ancient ceremony. I think betrothal rites, I wholly endorse that. Then the third part would be a marriage mystagogy, a post-wedding formation phase involving at least 2 to 3 years of accompanying couples through their first steps of married life. Okay, some parts of this I think just, okay, makes sense. The betrothal rite, I like that. Something like that, having some preparation the months before the wedding. Also, the post-wedding formation phase, I like that idea. I think practically, though, it probably would never happen. I mean, I think the idea of matching up in a parish a young couple, a newly married couple, with an experienced couple to help them through, I think that's a great idea. I know some parishes and some dioceses have tried that. Typically, it just falls apart. Nothing actually happens. It's very difficult to get volunteers because think about it, an older couple who are usually busy, they might have older kids, they have life, they can't really necessarily commit to these things. So it's very difficult to get volunteers. It peters out. You might have one or two meetings and then nothing ever happens after that. So while the idea is good, I think ultimately in execution, it probably not much would happen. But the thing that got the most news was this idea of a year-long catechumenate for marriage. So essentially, you go to your parish, say, I want to get married. Got my honey here. We're going to get married. And they say, okay, we're going to put you through a year-long program. Now, I think all of us know what this means in practice. In practice, what this means is the exact same thing that happened with RCIA. You have a bureaucratic program that you have to go through in order to get married. And basically, you have to follow it exactly like they tell you to do it. And so, for example, most parishes, if you say, for example, let's say you go to a parish in November, like right now, in November, and say, I want to become Catholic. You know what most parishes will say? Okay, great. Come back in September and we'll put you through the RCIA program and then you'll be received at Easter of the following year. And that's just ridiculous, frankly, because it depends on the person, obviously, who's becoming Catholic, getting baptized. How much do they know already? How much have they learned? What is their availability to go to these different programs and things like that, the classes? But rarely is any of that asked at most parishes. It's just like, here's the process to become Catholic. You go through the RCIA program. I think all of us know that's exactly what would happen with a marriage catechumenate. You go to a parish in December and say, hey, I want to get married. And they say, great. Our marriage catechumenate starts in September. It'll be done in April, and then you can get married the following summer. So basically a year and a half later, you can get married because you have to go through this class. And we see this over and over again in various different parishes, dioceses. It becomes a checkbox that you have to go through, a hoop you have to go through in order to get the sacrament. You see this in First Communion for young people as well, that you have to go through a certain class and there's no exceptions to that, no matter what your family situation is. Yes, I know that there are parishes where they don't do this, but I think it's more common than not that these things become just a checklist that you have to do. And I think that's exactly what would happen with a marriage catechumenate. It would just become another bureaucratic step that you have to go through to get married. And what do you think that's going to do typically to the average Catholic couple that's thinking about getting married? I think a lot of them will just bail and say, it's not worth it. I wasn't that excited about getting married in the Catholic Church anyway. Now I can have my beach wedding. I think a lot of them will just say, no, I'm not going to do that because it's ridiculous. We want to get married now. We want to get married in 6 months. We don't get married in a year and a half. Because again, it's not going to be necessarily a year. It's going to be, we have a class that you have to go through. It starts in September. It ends in April or May or something like that. Then you can get married that following summer. That's the practical. Now, so that came out this past summer. Now, the USCCB, when it met last week, and I think it was, it was 2 weeks ago. When they met 2 weeks ago, they talked about this. And one of the things that they, and so the National Catholic Register had an article they wrote about talking to someone, and I'll pull it up here on the screen. Okay, so U.S. bishops speak out about need for marriage catechumenate. And so what National Catholic Register did is they interviewed a number of bishops, what they thought about this. And what is interesting is they did interview the good bishops, I mean, so to speak, Corleone and some others. And so I want to look at some of the things they said about this. So again, so it just basically talks about the three-part plan. But then we start to have some quotes from different people. So Archbishop Corleone, whom I think everybody here is familiar with, he's very good on a number of things. He's been very strong when it comes to abortion, when it comes to pro-life marriage, things like that. And he's the chairman of the committee, the USCC Committee on Laity, Marriage, Family Life, and Youth. So he's kind of in charge of this. And he says that the Vatican's proposal, the one we just talked about, meshes well with the pastoral framework for marriage that we passed last year for dioceses to develop their own program. He said that whether or not couples would take a year for marriage preparation would be up to the bishop and his diocese. Now, again, let's look at reality. What do most bishops do? Do they think, oh, let's spend some time to figure out what's best for our couples, how we're going to do it here? No, they just say, we're going to do it the way they told us to do it. So it's going to be a year. Set up the they tell somebody in the chancery, set up the RCIA program for married people, the marriage catechumenate, and it will be a year long. We've seen this so much that there's no flexibility. There's no flexibility in the way that, for example, RCIA is done in so many places. That would be the case here as well. And so I think ultimately it says, and Archbishop Corleone goes on to say, nowadays couples plan way out more than a year in advance for their weddings. It's unfortunate because so much attention is given to the ceremony rather to the vocation. Yes, I agree. But I don't think there's a big problem with it taking longer. See, I think he's wrong there. A year might be a long time, but it's certainly not too long of a time to prepare for a lifelong commitment. Okay, I'm going to talk about this some more in a minute, but that is fundamentally mistaken. I think His Excellency is mistaken here. There's a couple reasons. Catholic teaching is you are not supposed to engage in sexual relations before marriage. And so a young person, let's say a 24-year-old young man, is engaged to a 23-year-old young woman. He wants to get married. It is natural for him to want to come together with his future wife. And he's going to wait till marriage. He wants to. The longer he goes, though, the greater the temptation is. And temptation is there for women as well. But I think with men, it's much stronger. And so we here have a case where to say, I don't think it's a big problem with it taking longer. Yeah, if you accept that they're cohabitating. But for those couples who are trying to live out the church's teaching in this regard, the longer you go, the more you increase the temptation. So I do think we should be very cognizant that when it comes to getting married, there is certain time frames that we should take into consideration. We shouldn't just say, okay, give them 5 years. Because if they're not cohabitating, if they're not having relations, then that is a problem. He said a year might be a long time, but certainly not too long of a time to prepare for a lifelong commitment. I think the problem there is we don't understand what marriage preparation truly is and commitment. And I'll talk about that in a minute. Okay, so then here is, okay, this is the thing I really want to bring up. Archbishop Sample, again, a very good bishop in a lot of ways. He's also a member of the USCCB Committee on Marriage. He said, the years of formation that we give to men who are discerning a priestly formation are long. They go through anywhere from 7 to 9 years of formation to become a priest. Okay, I've heard this argument for a very long time, that a man who wants to become a priest, he typically goes through a number of years. He said anywhere from 7 to 9 years of formation to become a priest. I don't think it's that long in a lot of cases, but it's at least 4 years of preparation to become a priest in a seminary. So it's like, if they're doing it for that vocation, why shouldn't we do it for marriage, the marriage vocation? I think the problem is fundamentally is that someone who grows up in a solid Catholic family, they get marriage preparation from the day of their birth. So they have at least usually 18 years of marriage preparation because they see firsthand, day in, day out, what it means to be married, because they see their parents live it out. Now, I know, yes, there are situations where, a lot of situations these days where that's not the case. But to say that people don't get marriage preparation, or they need, or to compare it to a priestly vocation and their preparation, I think is apples to oranges. Because most young men have no idea what the priesthood is about, what it means to live as a priest. They don't see that day in, day out, like they do with marriage, with their parents. And so, yeah, it makes sense that they're going to take a number of years. Back in, you know, the early church, probably more like the Middle Ages, a lot of times you had young people, young boys who would be given to the monastery at the age of 5 or 6. My guess is when they turn 18 to become a full monk, they don't need then another 7 to 9 years of preparation to become a monk, because they've lived it out for the past 12. And so likewise, I see no reason why a young couple, let's say you have a young couple, hypothetically, both come from families where the parents are intact. They've lived out a Catholic marriage the best they can. They don't need a year. And so I think that's a bad analogy. And yes, I will address in a little bit about the idea of what about a lot of people who don't go in that situation, who aren't in that situation. So I think, okay, let's continue going on. Okay, let me scroll down a little bit. Okay, here's another thing, is promoting the vocation of matrimony. Bishop Papraki of Springfield, another decent bishop who also serves on the committee, told that there's even a preliminary step before marriage preparation these days, which is promoting matrimony as a vocation. Traditionally, we've talked about vocations. We've talked about priesthood and consecrated life. And it was just sort of taken for granted that young people knew about the sacrament of marriage. And if you were a Catholic, that was kind of a customary expectation. But now we can't take that for granted. Many young people do not have marriage on their radar at all. I think the problem is that, and he says, that's the first step before we even talk about formation program. How do we get young people to recognize it as a true vocation of giving yourself and love to your spouse? Again, I think the problem is this is church language. The average person doesn't even know what a vocation is. The idea that we talk about, and in most Catholic churches, parishes I've been to, they always bring up marriage as a vocation. In fact, they're afraid to bring up the vocation of the priesthood as a separate vocation. When they pray for vocations, they almost always include married people. So I don't think it's really true that people who go to Mass don't understand that marriage is a vocation. But I think, obviously, there's a valid point Papraki has here, this idea that you have to start young. But again, how do you do that? The number one way you do that is you live in a family where the parents are living out the vocation. That's how you learn about it. You don't need to have a catechesis about it. You live it out. You learn it by osmosis, which is actually the best way to learn the Catholic faith. You don't need a huge catechesis program for kids who are in a homeschooling family, for example, where the family is taking their faith seriously. And so I think that's something that people need to understand, is that this idea that we need to stress more, that's a vocation. We already do that. And most people don't even care. They don't listen to the idea that it's a vocation. Okay, so let me go on in this article a little bit longer. Okay, let me just stop there with that article and I will continue on. So what we see here is, we see the Vatican proposes this three-step plan that basically extends marriage prep, makes it more intensive, makes it a catechesis like RCIA is. And the bishops are saying, yes, it sounds good. We don't see any problem with extending marriage prep, making it longer. I think ultimately, yet again, church leaders are proposing a program to put a Band-Aid on a systemic problem. That's the issue here. We have a systemic problem. It's not a simple problem. We have a systemic problem, and another program isn't going to fix it. I was actually in charge of a marriage prep the marriage preparation programs in a diocese for 5 years when I was director of evangelization. That was under me. And what I found is that typically the way it works is the couple meets with a priest or a deacon every once in a while. There's usually a weekend retreat or a Saturday day retreat that they have to go to. And that's typically how it's done. And most Catholics I've seen that when they come to get married, there's two different categories. One is the faithful Catholics who know what they're doing. That's a very small category, unfortunately. And then two is the most couples who are Catholic. They're getting married in Catholic Church, but they don't really practice the faith. They don't really know much about it. There's very few in the middle there. So most marriage prep programs fall into being useful only for the people who aren't there. So they're not really helpful for the committed Catholics because they already know all this stuff. They're not really helpful for the people who are barely in the church. They're only kind of going through the motions because they're not listening. And so it's really just, it often falls on deaf ears, most of these marriage preparation programs. But we love our program. So when a program isn't working, what do? We say, let's program more. And that's essentially what I think this is doing. So, okay. I know this has all been kind of a downer, bad news, some things that we don't really want to talk about, don't really want to think about. I know it's depressing, but let's talk about what are actual solutions. Now, we need to stop putting Band-Aids on systemic rot. More programs are not going to solve the problem. And we see this in every aspect of church life. So, for example, when it comes to like the liturgy, how the liturgy is celebrated in the church today is fundamentally broken in so many places, but we're not willing to say that. We're not willing to just say out loud, yeah, we need to completely revamp how we celebrate the liturgy. We can't just keep putting little Band-Aids on, like say, okay, let's do this, let's do that. But when really the problem is much deeper. The same thing is true about catechesis. We want to tweak that as well. We need wholesale systemic changes in how things are done. And so what we need to do, I think, is that a couple of things. First is we need to work on existing marriages. That's what the focus should be on. Like when people talk about getting better youth programs, youth groups, things like that, I'm always like, no, I think the problem is the parents. The parents aren't raising their children properly, and throwing them in a youth group every once in a while isn't going to necessarily solve that. It might do some good, but it doesn't really slow the bleeding that much. So what I think we need to do is focus on married couples and talking about what marriage is. We need to really encourage a true understanding of Catholic marriage. And so what does that mean first and foremost? That the purpose of marriage is procreation. Yes, another purpose is the unit of aspects to unite the couple, but it's procreation. So when we went back to those stats that I showed before, where everybody thought it's okay, I think, what was it 70% or something like that, thought it was okay for a couple to choose not to have children, that doesn't understand the purpose of marriage. And so if couples don't realize that that procreation is the purpose of marriage, is why we get married, along with the unit of aspects, then they're not going to understand marriage. So we really have to push this idea and stop being embarrassed to talk about that. You see that all over the place in marriage prep programs and from the pulpit. Catholic leaders are afraid to say to emphasize the importance of the procreative aspects of marriage, because most couples, they get married, they want to wait a number of years before they have kids. They want to have one or two kids, and that's it. That is not a Catholic understanding of marriage. Obviously, if you end up only having one or two kids because of that's how it worked out, because that's how God allowed it to happen, okay. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that, of course. It's the planning. That's the problem, where you say, I'm only going to have a couple kids. We're going to wait at least 5 years before we have them. That's the problem. And this ties into in our promotion of NFP. Now, I am not somebody who's against NFP. I know some Catholics, more traditional Catholics, they tend to being anti-NFP. I'm not like that. I think NFP is great. I think there's a lot of good in NFP, and I don't think it's immoral to use NFP. The problem, though, is if when you make NFP the Catholic birth control, when you sell it as a means to restrict pregnancy. I mean, honestly, with NFP, we should lead with the fact that it helps you get pregnant. I think a lot of couples are experiencing difficulties with getting pregnant. I think a lot of the medical and health aspects of our life today make it like that. I think NFP should be promoted first and foremost as, hey, we're going to help you have more kids. This is a great thing. And we're not going to be apologize about that. We're going to talk about how great it is to have a lot of kids. And yes, if there are serious reasons that you cannot have kids, NFP does work for that too, at a better rate than contraception. And if there are grave reasons, and there are some situations that are grave reasons, but we should talk about that too. What are the grave reasons? Is it just that I don't feel, you know, I want to get established in my job? I want to buy a house first? No, those aren't grave reasons. And so we should really talk about that. We should make that very clear that you need to have actually grave reasons to abstain, you know, use NFP to postpone having children. Another thing we have to do, another systemic problem, is we never talk about divorce in the Catholic Church. You never hear a sermon about that. You never hear that talked about, but we have to make it clear. Divorce isn't just a bad thing. It is not an option. It is unthinkable. It should be unthinkable for a Catholic to get divorced. And so that's a hard thing to say in today's church, because so many Catholics are divorced. What was it? 34%, I think we saw. Of Catholics have been divorced. Yeah, 34%. Now it's probably higher than that now. And so if that's the case, a lot of people get offended, because when you say something like divorce is evil, God hates divorce, divorce is a mortal sin if you willingly choose to do it, then a lot of people who are divorced are going to get uncomfortable. They're going to get offended. You're going to get a lot of letters to the bishop complaining. But we're not going to solve the marriage crisis in the church today if we don't make it clear how awful divorce is, that it's just something you cannot choose to do. Now, if you're in a situation where your spouse has left you and divorced you, obviously that's something you have to, that's a burden that you, no moral fault, but it's something that is unfortunate and is a tragedy of sin. So we need to preach against divorce. Also, I think we need to do more things, family things. I don't like the division of families in a lot of parishes where it's like, okay, the youth group does this and the mom's group does this and dads do this. And I think all those things by themselves are good if there's also family, if there's also family events that make sure families get together as families. I think we need to do that. So like I've already said a few times, the best, the most proper marriage preparation is simply living in a good family. And too many Catholics, of course, grow up not in a intact family with the mother and father both there in their original marriage with their kids. But that is the solution. It's not a program. It's getting families to be to live out their faith, because then their kids are much more likely to do so. There's no guarantees, but your kids are much more likely to have solid marriages if parents have solid marriages. So ultimately, there are no quick fixes. There are no programs. I know a lot of people will say, it's not realistic what you're saying. I heard that all the time with the diocese. You're not realistic to say, oh, they just need to live in better families. I know it's not. And that's the whole point. The point is it's not realistic because of how far we've fallen. And so we're not going to solve the marriage crisis without solving a lot of the root problems the liturgy, catechesis, how we proclaim the gospel, how we talk about divorce, all contraception. I mean, all these things have to, these are root issues that have to be talked about. And until we really address them, and for example, stand up strongly and talk about the fact that gay marriage is not marriage. A man cannot marry a man. A woman cannot marry a woman. Until we talk about that and really proclaim it strongly, we're not going to fix the crisis. Now, the truth is, if we do all these things, I know a lot of people are going to leave. But I think the marriages that happen, actually do happen in the church then, will be much stronger marriages. They will have kids who have stronger marriages. And over time, the Catholic marriage crisis will be solved. This is a decades-long effort. It's not a program to fix it in a couple years. It will take a very long time. We need to build strong Catholic families. If we do that, we will have strong Catholic marriages in the future. It's basically I look at this marriage program. I know it's well-intentioned, this marriage catechumenate. It's like the doctor who just gives you pills for your symptoms. They're not looking at the underlying cause. Let's say you have diabetes or something else like that, where obesity, where losing weight would be really helpful for you. No, let's just give you some pills. And so therefore your symptoms will go away or they'll be decreased. When really what they should be saying is you need to completely overhaul your lifestyle. You need to change how you eat. You need to exercise. You need to do all these other things. Why do doctors not say that? Because they know people will stop going to them. They'll start going to another doctor who gives them pills. But that can't be the way the church looks at it. Instead of just saying, here's a pill, just have a new marriage program. Well, that's our pill to cover over the symptoms. What we really need to do is look at the root problems. We need a fundamental change in how we live our Catholic faith in families. That's the only way we're going to solve it. It's not going to be just something like a new program. Okay, so the last thing I just want to say here is, I think we should look for examples. I think Blessed Carl statue behind me, the bust. Blessed Carl and Servant of God, his wife, Servant of God, Empress Zita, they are a very good model for marriage. They were only married for 11 years before Blessed Carl died. But I love what Blessed Carl said on the night before the wedding is, now we're going to help each other get to heaven. It's a beautiful thought. There's actually a little booklet on marriage preparation on Blessed Carl and Empress Zita. I gave it to my daughter who's right now going through marriage preparation because she's getting married next year. So I'd recommend that as well. But let's pray to Blessed Carl, Servant of God Zita, for strong marriages, that people might live out strong marriages, and that would then help their kids to also live out strong marriages. Okay, I think I'll end it there. Until next time, everybody, God love you.